VOA 1, the hits.
Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson. This program is aimed at English learners. So we speak a little slower, and we use words and phrases, especially written, for people learning English.
Today on the program, you will hear from Brian Lynn and John Russell. Later, Steve Ember will present our American history series, The Making of a Nation. But first, Australia's highest court has ruled against some major news media companies in a case about comments on their social media pages. The court decided that the companies are legally responsible for comments because they are the publishers of their pages. The decision is an important win for Dylan Voller. He is seeking legal action against the media companies. As a youth, Voller was placed in a detention center in Australia's Northern Territory. His treatment while there was the center of a 2016 documentary film. The film led to a deeper investigation into the mistreatment of young prisoners in Australia. Several news organizations posted pictures of Voller on social media when the film came out. One showed him tied to a chair with a covering over his head. Many Facebook users posted comments about Voller on those companies' social media pages. As a result, Voller wants to sue several Australian media companies. The case has been held up by a separate legal dispute over whether the companies were the publishers of users' comments. The High Court found that the media groups had permitted and urged comments from Facebook users by setting up a public Facebook page and posting content. The judges said it did not matter that the companies deleted the comments later. A spokesperson for Australia's Nine Network, one of the companies involved, said, "We are obviously disappointed with the outcome, as it will have ramifications for what we can post on social media in the future." Peter O'Brien is Voller's lawyer. He told the Australian Broadcasting Corp that Voller is relieved the long legal fight is over. "People who might be vulnerable to social media mob attacks, they are protected," he said. The High Court decision now permits Voller to continue his legal action against newspapers The Sydney Morning Herald, The Australian, and others. The case will continue later in the New South Wales State Supreme Court. A trial there will decide whether the Facebook comments truly defamed Voller.
A private space flight launched by America's SpaceX has carried the first all-civilian crew into orbit. The four civilian passengers are traveling on SpaceX's fully automated Dragon spacecraft, or capsule. They are on a 3-day trip orbiting the Earth. The capsule launched Wednesday on top of one of SpaceX's reusable Falcon 9 rockets from Kennedy Space Center on Florida's Cape Canaveral. The trip, named Inspiration 4, marks SpaceX's first flight for private passengers. It is the first time a spacecraft has orbited Earth carrying a fully civilian crew. The capsule has already been in orbit. It was used for SpaceX's second astronaut flight for the U.S. space agency NASA to the International Space Station. The spacecraft was expected to reach an altitude of 575 kilometers above Earth. That is higher than the ISS and just above the current position of NASA's Hubble Space Telescope. The flight is being led by 38-year-old American businessman Jared Isaacman, who used his own money to pay for the trip. With a lifelong interest in flying, Isaacman has flown fighter jets and started a company to train others to do so. But he is not a professional astronaut. Isaacman organized the flight as an effort to raise money for one of his favorite causes, St. Jude Children's Research Hospital in Memphis, Tennessee. The hospital treats child cancer patients. When announcing the flight in February, he promised the hospital $100 million and aims to raise another $100 million in donations. Isaacman offered one seat on the spacecraft to Haley Arsenault, a former patient at St. Jude. Now 29, Arsenault was 10 years old when doctors discovered she had bone cancer. The disease led to a medical operation that replaced her thigh bone. She is the first person in space with a prosthesis. Arsenault said she is happy to represent those who are not physically perfect. Arsenault went on to become a physician's assistant at St. Jude. She will also be the youngest American to travel into space. She takes this honor from the late Sally Ride, who became the first American woman in space in 1983 at age 32. The flight's other two passengers were chosen through competitions organized by Isaacman. One of those winners is Cyan Proctor, a 51-year-old community college teacher from Phoenix, Arizona. She is also a pilot and was a NASA astronaut finalist candidate about 10 years ago. The other passenger is 42-year-old Chris Sombroski, a data engineer from Everett, Washington. He is a former U.S. Air Force member who has experience with flying and missile systems. Sombroski was chosen from a group of 72,000 St. Jude donors who took part in a lottery for the seat. The effort raised $113 million. The four passengers spent months in intense training before the flight. This included altitude exercises, simulator training, experiences with weightlessness, and rides in fighter jets. The crew plans to perform a series of medical experiments during the trip. The members said in a statement they hope the experiments can lead to a better understanding of human health on Earth and during future space flights. The SpaceX flight follows recent civilian space trips carried out by two other private companies, Virgin Galactic and Blue Origin. Those flights, however, were piloted by professional astronauts. The trips did not enter Earth orbit, but passengers were able to experience weightlessness and observe Earth for a few minutes before returning home. I'm Brian Lynn.
Ed Sheeran's Bad Habits has been one of the most popular songs on the Billboard Hot 100 and Spotify's top hits.
Every time you come around, you know I can't say no. Every time the sun goes down, I let you take control.
In this week's Everyday Grammar, we will explore how the song can teach you about how to describe regular or repeated actions and events. Every is an adjective that is used to describe a repeated activity or event. It shows how often this activity or event happens or is done. For example, consider the statement,
I wake up at 6 a.m. every day.
The repeated action is waking up. The adjective every describes the noun day. Notice that the verb wake up is in the simple present, a verb form that can be used to describe regular, repeated actions. Although the verb is called the simple present, it does not exactly connect with the present time. It suggests that something often happens or is generally true. Adjective use and verb form are two important ideas for understanding the grammar behind some of the lines of Ed Sheeran's song, as we will see. A habit is a usual way of behaving. It can be something that a person does often in a regular way. Bad habits are ways of behaving that are not good. Let's listen to a few words from Sheeran's song called Bad Habits.
Every time you come around, you know I can't say no. Every time the sun goes down, I let you take control.
Notice that the adjective every describes the noun time. In this case, time does not mean hours, minutes, or seconds. Instead, time means an instance of something happening. Notice that the verbs are in the simple present. You come around, the sun goes down, and so on. The basic idea of the words is the following structure. Every time something else happens. You can use the basic structure of Sheeran's words to make your own statements about habits or things that are generally true. For example, a person who does not like grammar might say,
Every time I open a grammar book, I fall asleep.
A person who likes grammar might say,
Every time I open a grammar book, my heart fills with joy.
When you are listening to music or reading in English, pay careful attention to how the speakers or writers describe repeated actions. Take note of how they use adjectives, such as every, and the simple present verb form. And remember the following statement. Every time you have a chance to practice, you should try to make the most of it. I'm John Russell.
Welcome to The Making of a Nation. I'm Steve Ember. The national election of 1832 put Andrew Jackson in the White House for a second term as president. One of the major events of his second term was the fight against the Bank of the United States. In 1836, the bank's charter ended, and the Treasury Department took responsibility for most of the government's finances. Many people considered Jackson's bank veto one of the most important actions of his presidency. Another major event of Andrew Jackson's second term as president involved Texas. The United States had given its claim to Texas to Spain in 1819. Then Mexico won its independence from Spain in 1821. After that, Texas belonged to Mexico. During the 1820s, Americans poured into Texas. Most of the settlers came from the states of Tennessee, Mississippi, and Louisiana. Many owned slaves and brought the slaves with them to Texas. American settlers in Texas were able to buy land for almost nothing, but they had to promise to join the Roman Catholic Church. They also had to promise to obey the laws of Mexico. Over time, Mexican leaders saw the danger of continuing to permit Americans to settle in Texas. The Mexican government sent an official to inspect conditions along the border with the United States. The official reported that as he traveled north through Texas, he saw less and less that was Mexican and more that was American. He said there were very few Mexicans in some towns, and these Mexicans, he said, were extremely poor. He said the American settlers were not becoming true Mexicans. They were not speaking Spanish. They were not becoming Catholics, and they were not accepting Mexican traditions. The official said the situation in Texas could throw the whole Mexican nation into revolution. He urged Mexico to send troops to occupy Texas. The situation between the settlers and the Mexican government became increasingly tense. For the most part, there was little that President Andrew Jackson could do. The United States had a friendship treaty with Mexico. The government in Washington had a duty to remain neutral. In April 1833, the settlers in Texas held a convention. They prepared a list of appeals to the leader of Mexico, General Santa Anna. One of the Americans, Stephen Austin, carried the appeals to Mexico City. He spent 6 months negotiating with the Mexican government. General Santa Anna promised to honor all the requests except one. He would not make Texas a Mexican state, although he said that might be possible someday. Stephen Austin was satisfied. He left the Mexican capital to return to Texas. On his way home, to his surprise, Austin was arrested. He was arrested because of a letter he had written earlier. He had written it when his negotiations with Mexican officials seemed to be failing. He had said, "It might be best if the people declared Texas an independent state. Austin was put in prison in Mexico City for a year and a half. Stephen Austin urged the people of Texas to remain loyal to Mexico. But talk of rebellion had already begun. The settlers were calling themselves Texans. In November 1835, representatives from all parts of Texas held a convention to discuss the situation. They had no plans to take Texas out of the Mexican Republic. In fact, a proposal to do that was defeated by a large vote. However, the Texans took action to protect themselves against Santa Anna, who had declared himself dictator. They organized a temporary state government. They also organized a state army, and they made plans for another convention. Before the Texans could meet again, Santa Anna led an army of 7,000 men across the Rio Grande River into Texas. The first soldiers reached San Antonio on February 23rd. The Texas forces withdrew to an old Spanish mission church called the Alamo. On March 1st, the second Texas convention opened. This time, the representatives voted to declare Texas a free, independent, and sovereign republic. They wrote a constitution based on the Constitution of the United States. They created a government. David Burnett became president. Sam Houston was to continue as commander of Texas forces. On the second day of the convention, a letter came from the Alamo in San Antonio. The letter was addressed to the people of Texas and all Americans. The commander of Texas forces at the Alamo, Lieutenant Colonel William Barrett Travis, wrote, "I am besieged by 1,000 or more of the Mexicans under Santa Anna. I have sustained a continual bombardment and cannonade for 24 hours and have not lost a man. The enemy has demanded a surrender at discretion. Otherwise, the garrison are to be put to the sword if the fort is taken. I have answered the demand with a cannon shot, and our flag still waves proudly from the walls. I shall never surrender or retreat." The letter from the Alamo closed with the words, "Victory or death." Representatives at the convention wanted to leave immediately to go to the aid of the Texans at the Alamo. But Sam Houston told them it was their duty to remain and create a government for Texas. Houston would go there himself with a small force. The help came too late for the 189 men, perhaps even more, at the Alamo. The defenders included some Tejanos, or Hispanic Texans, and the famed frontiersman Davy Crockett. Santa Anna's forces captured the mission on March 6th. When the battle ended, not a single one of the defenders was still alive. Sam Houston ordered all Texas forces to withdraw to the northeast, away from the Mexican army. One group of Texans did not move fast enough. Santa Anna trapped them. He said the Texans would not be harmed if they surrendered. They did. 1 week later, they were marched to a field and shot. Only a few escaped to tell the story. Santa Anna then moved against Sam Houston. He was sure his large army could defeat the remaining Texas force. President Andrew Jackson and Sam Houston were close friends. When told of Houston's retreat, the president pointed to a map of Texas. He said, "If Sam Houston is worth anything, he will make his stand here." Jackson pointed to the mouth of the San Jacinto River. The Battle of San Jacinto began at 4 o'clock in the afternoon. There were about 800 Texans. There were twice as many Mexicans. The Mexicans did not expect the retreating Texans to turn and fight, but they did. Shouting, "Remember the Alamo!" the Texans ran at the Mexican soldiers. 18 minutes later, the battle was over. Santa Anna's army was destroyed. On May 14, 1836, Texas President David Burnett and General Santa Anna signed a treaty. The treaty made Texas independent from Mexico. Historian Daniel Feller says President Jackson had to be careful when responding to the situation in Texas.
Whether or not Jackson approved of the insurrection in Texas, whether or not he saw it as complicating or easing the path toward eventual assimilation of Texas, there's no doubt that he wanted Texas as part of the United States.
Jackson did not want Mexico to blame the United States for the revolution, even though the American government had been trying to buy Texas for many years. Jackson believed the country should spread as far west as it could. But he also worried that giving statehood to Texas would deepen the split between the northern and southern states. Texas would be a state where slavery was permitted. For this reason, the anti-slavery leaders in the North strongly opposed Texas statehood. Jackson told a representative from Texas, William Wharton, that there was a way that statehood for Texas would bring the North and South together instead of splitting them apart. Jackson said Texas should claim California. The fishing interests of the North and East, said Jackson, wanted a port on the Pacific coast. Offer it to them, the president said, and they will soon forget that Texas is a slave state. Jackson and Wharton held this discussion just 3 weeks before the end of the president's term. Wharton spent much time at the White House. He also worked with congressmen, urging the lawmakers to recognize Texas. He was able to get Congress to include in a bill a statement permitting the United States to send a minister to Texas. This bill was approved 4 days before the end of Jackson's term. On the afternoon of March 3, 1837, Jackson agreed to recognize the new republic led by his old friend Sam Houston. 9 years would pass before Texas became an American state. I'm Steve Ember, inviting you to join us next time for The Making of a Nation, American History, from VOA Learning English.
And that's our program for today. Listen again tomorrow to learn English through stories from around the world. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson.